Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel avanzado C2. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
We are told that in contemporary life, a flood of information is arriving all the time. But in truth, almost all of this information is remarkably self-sorting. Texts bring me words from people who need something from me. Email from people who want something from me. My Twitter feed, meanwhile, is devoted to the people who hate me. Only my spam box provides word from people who like me, or pretend to. Let me enlarge on this division. Texts, as I say, are the language of contemporary need. My 2 kids, now both away at university, use texting exclusively. Sometimes what they need is quick counsel or a quick editorial read of a college essay. But the other people who need something from me are texters too. My editor, when she wants something, emails me, but when she needs something urgently, I hear from her by or on text. People who are waiting impatiently for me to arrive at a delayed appointment text me brusquely, ETA, and I reply with a question mark or a there in 5. Email, as I say, expresses wants, long-term desires. My editor uses it to find out if I would be interested in writing something on some non-topical subject. The varieties of information overload, let's say. And the wine purchases I longingly consider and then don't make arrive the same way. Twitter is pure bile. Anyone who, reading something of mine, thinks it damnably centrist, the worst thing anyone can be, truth only arising at the extremes, comes out spitting and doesn't stop. Twitter has both nationalized anger and normalized it. It is no accident that the leading political figure most inclined to rage and hatred, uses Twitter exclusively. Only when I wander, usually by accident, into my spam box do I find anything resembling actual affection, prose that captures the spark of human sympathy, the language of exquisite deference that the Enlightenment philosophers insisted was the necessary mucilage of human societies. Someone called Willard Grayson, for instance, writes to me with, quote, "the greatest possible respect," having, quote, read my website, and become, quote again, aware of my reputation for integrity on behalf of a company to solicit for representative in your country. If you think you have a solid background and idea of making good profit, please write me for possible business cooperation, he concludes. My correspondents are aware of my reputation for honest dealing. They solicit my attention. They beg me honestly to honor this last refuge of their hope. They know that they can rely on me. They have heard excellent things about me from unnamed common friends. They then, trusting and admiring me so much, lay out the fuzzy grounds of a scheme in which we will divide some astoundingly large sum of money, usually $20 or $30 million, in exchange for my clicking on a link, or sometimes more boldly, as in the first letter, by sending my social security number and a picture of my passport. Now, obviously, lest anyone listening be worrying about my speed on the uptake, I am aware that these correspondents only pretend to like me and are, obviously, engaged in various scams of various degrees of desperation. But what intrigues me is that these scammy letters conform, as no other missives I receive do, to the hallowed and ancient forms of human correspondence. They alone maintain the decencies. They are written as everyone was told to write letters for centuries. They begin with human warmth. They proceed to startling news. They end by requesting a reply. Now, I'm also aware that this elaborate courtesy is enforced by cupidity. Given the nature of the scams, which depend on casting so vast a net, only a highly mannerly bait can have any hope of catching the prey. The scammers are forced into excessive courtesy by extreme numbers. If there are enough spam letters sent out, someone, somewhere, will respond. It is difficult to believe that anyone, anywhere will, but someone must, or else it would not continue. Meanwhile, the spam-seeking algorithm, the filter, sorts out good mail from bad by a series of mechanical checks and, apparently, from reading within our mail telltale signs of spamming. Clearly, these signs must include the presence in the email of these endearments, these signs of social deference. The telltale signs of bad faith are the language of good faith. The surest proof of insincerity is the articulation of sincerity. The algorithm seeks and destroys the spark of human sympathy as it arises.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
We are told that in contemporary life, a flood of information is arriving all the time. But in truth, almost all of this information is remarkably self-sorting. Texts bring me words from people who need something from me. Email from people who want something from me. My Twitter feed, meanwhile, is devoted to the people who hate me. Only my spam box provides word from people who like me, or pretend to. Let me enlarge on this division. Texts, as I say, are the language of contemporary need. My two kids, now both away at university, use texting exclusively. Sometimes what they need is quick counsel or a quick editorial read of a college essay. But the other people who need something from me are texters too. My editor, when she wants something, emails me, but when she needs something urgently, I hear from her by or on text. People who are waiting impatiently for me to arrive at a delayed appointment text me brusquely, ETA, and I reply with a question mark or a there in five. Email, as I say, expresses wants, long-term desires. My editor uses it to find out if I would be interested in writing something on some non-topical subject. The varieties of information overload, let's say. And the wine purchases I longingly consider and then don't make arrive the same way. Twitter is pure bile. Anyone who, reading something of mine, thinks it damnably centrist, the worst thing anyone can be, truth only arising at the extremes, comes out spitting and doesn't stop. Twitter has both nationalized anger and normalized it. It is no accident that the leading political figure most inclined to rage and hatred uses Twitter exclusively. Only when I wander, usually by accident, into my spam box do I find anything resembling actual affection, prose that captures the spark of human sympathy, the language of exquisite deference that the Enlightenment philosophers insisted was the necessary mucilage of human societies. Someone called Willard Grayson, for instance, writes to me with, quote, the greatest possible respect, having, quote, read my website and become, quote again, aware of my reputation for integrity on behalf of a company to solicit for representative in your country. If you think you have a solid background and idea of making good profit, please write me for possible business cooperation, he concludes. My correspondents are aware of my reputation for honest dealing. They solicit my attention. They beg me honestly to honor this last refuge of their hope. They know that they can rely on me. They have heard excellent things about me from unnamed common friends. They then, trusting and admiring me so much, lay out the fuzzy grounds of a scheme in which we will divide some astoundingly large sum of money, usually $20 or $30 million, in exchange for my clicking on a link, or sometimes more boldly, as in the first letter, by sending my social security number and a picture of my passport. Now, obviously, lest anyone listening be worrying about my speed on the uptake, I am aware that these correspondents only pretend to like me and are, obviously, engaged in various scams of various degrees of desperation. But what intrigues me is that these scammy letters conform, as no other missives I receive do, to the hallowed and ancient forms of human correspondence. They alone maintain the decencies. They are written as everyone was told to write letters for centuries. They begin with human warmth. They proceed to startling news. They end by requesting a reply. Now, I'm also aware that this elaborate courtesy is enforced by cupidity. Given the nature of the scams, which depend on casting so vast a net, only a highly mannerly bait can have any hope of catching the prey. The scammers are forced into excessive courtesy by extreme numbers. If there are enough spam letters sent out, someone, somewhere, will respond. It is difficult to believe that anyone, anywhere will, but someone must, or else it would not continue. Meanwhile, the spam-seeking algorithm, the filter, sorts out good mail from bad by a series of mechanical checks and apparently from reading within our mail telltale signs of spamming. Clearly, these signs must include the presence in the email of these endearments, these signs of social deference. The telltale signs of bad faith are the language of good faith. The surest proof of insincerity is the articulation of sincerity. The algorithm seeks and destroys the spark of human sympathy as it arises.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract 0.
Ada and Worthing Councils in West Sussex are buying land to return it to nature to help tackle climate change. The authorities say they have broad support for the plan, including from a recently convened climate assembly, where local people got a say on how to reduce the area's carbon footprint.
Extract 1.
At the foot of Cissbury Ring in the South Downs National Park lies a 100-acre site that is currently fallow. Since the 1970s, Shepherd's Mead has been farmed by a tenant, with the council owning the freehold. But now they want to take back possession of the land and return it to its natural habitat.
Extract 2.
What I'm not aware of is, apart from Ada District Council next door to us who we work with, I'm not aware of any councils who are actively buying up and bringing land back into council possession to promote biodiversity, rewild sites.
Extract 3.
Rewilding is all about creating better habitats for creatures to thrive in. So I didn't really expect to see an explosion in the different types of flora and fauna in the local area of Shepherd's Mead.
Extract 4.
What do farmers think of initiatives like this?
It's great to see Ada and Worthing Council taking an interest in the land in their area. The concern would be that what we've seen with rewilding, it can be incredibly expensive. The other thing is that farmland is there to grow food. We can't just use farmland for offsetting. We've got to find a way to find that balance between biodiversity and growing food.
Extract 5.
Now, all this week, we've been looking at gene editing. The government's currently holding a consultation on plans to allow GE crops and animals here. As we've discussed, that's a controversial idea, as the technique's been effectively banned in Europe.
Extract
6.
Plant biologist Zach Lipman is using the CRISPR technique to develop new crops for the future. He's using genome editing to change how quickly tomatoes grow and the shape of their vines.
Extract
7.
Now, on top of that, we also have a gene that we had found in tomato that makes the stems shorter. And so these genes together, mutated by genome editing, we could immediately compact that plant and make it extremely fast flowering. And we had a variety in prototype that we could use to grow in shipping containers that are hydroponic farms.
Extract 8.
E10 is coming to petrol stations. It's petrol with 10% bioethanol blended in. And while most motorists won't notice a difference, the government says the move will reduce CO2 emissions by 2%. It's all part of the government's strategy for reaching net zero emissions by 2050. But that's been criticised by MPs on the Public Accounts Committee.
Extract 9.
For cereals farmers, certainly on the East Coast where we have our two bioethanol plants, it'll certainly increase the demand for wheat in those two regions. And if we do see a more attractive ex-farm price for wheat versus other grains, then there will be a stronger incentive to grow wheat because the prices will be more attractive.
And presumably here we're talking about, in the nicest way, any old wheat. It doesn't have to be a particular standard to be good for biofuel.
They have certain requirements which they will have to meet, but not necessarily in the same degree as we would see, for example, with bread wheat. It's not the same high protein requirement. It's a requirement for good starch production and even grain.
Extract 10.
Welsh farming unions say they feel betrayed and deeply disappointed after an attempt to scrap strict new rules limiting their use of slurry and fertiliser was narrowly defeated in the Senedd this week. Well, as we reported when the idea was first mooted, farmers see putting the whole country under restrictions aimed at cleaning up Welsh rivers as disproportionate and say it could push some smaller farms out of business.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas.
Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 0.
Ada and Worthing councils in West Sussex are buying land to return it to nature to help tackle climate change. The authorities say they have broad support for the plan, including from a recently convened climate assembly, where local people got a say on how to reduce the area's carbon footprint.
Extract 1.
At the foot of Cissbury Ring in the South Downs National Park lies a 100-acre site that is currently fallow. Since the 1970s, Shepherd's Mead has been farmed by a tenant, with the council owning the freehold. But now they want to take back possession of the land and return it to its natural habitat.
Extract 2.
What I'm not aware of is, apart from Ada District Council next door to us who we work with, I'm not aware of any councils who are actively buying up and bringing land back into council possession to promote biodiversity, rewild sites.
Extract 3.
Rewilding is all about creating better habitats for creatures to thrive in. So I didn't really expect to see an explosion in the different types of flora and fauna in the local area of Shepherd's Mead.
Extract 4.
What do farmers think of initiatives like this?
It's great to see Ada and Worthing Council taking an interest in the land in their area. The concern would be that what we've seen with rewilding, it can be incredibly expensive. The other thing is that farmland is there to grow food. We can't just use farmland for offsetting. We've got to find a way to find that balance between biodiversity and growing food.
Extract 5.
Now, all this week, we've been looking at gene editing. The government's currently holding a consultation on plans to allow GE crops and animals here. As we've discussed, that's a controversial idea, as the technique's been effectively banned in Europe.
Extract
6.
Plant biologist Zach Lipman is using the CRISPR technique to develop new crops for the future. He's using genome editing to change how quickly tomatoes grow and the shape of their vines.
Extract
7.
Now, on top of that, we also have a gene that we had found in tomato that makes the stems shorter. And so these genes together, mutated by genome editing, we could immediately compact that plant and make it extremely fast flowering. And we had a variety in prototype that we could use to grow in shipping containers that are hydroponic farms.
Extract
8.
E10 is coming to petrol stations. It's petrol with 10% bioethanol blended in. And while most motorists won't notice a difference, the government says the move will reduce CO2 emissions by 2%. It's all part of the government's strategy for reaching net zero emissions by 2050. But that's been criticised by MPs on the Public Accounts Committee.
Extract
9.
For cereals farmers, certainly on the East Coast where we have our two bioethanol plants, it'll certainly increase the demand for wheat in those two regions. And if we do see a more attractive ex-farm price for wheat versus other grains, then there will be a stronger incentive to grow wheat because the prices will be more attractive.
And presumably here we're talking about, in the nicest way, any old wheat. It doesn't have to be a particular standard to be good for biofuel.
They have certain requirements which they will have to meet, but not necessarily in the same degree as we would see, for example, with bread wheat. It's not the same high protein requirement. It's a requirement for good starch production and even grain.
Extract
10.
Welsh farming unions say they feel betrayed and deeply disappointed after an attempt to scrap strict new rules limiting their use of slurry and fertiliser was narrowly defeated in the Senedd this week. Well, as we reported when the idea was first mooted, farmers see putting the whole country under restrictions aimed at cleaning up Welsh rivers as disproportionate and say it could push some smaller farms out of business.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas.
Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Well, earlier in the show, we were chatting about the reopening of retail. It's been a strange few months of empty main streets and boarded up shops. Much of the footfall has instead gone online. Facebook is even getting in on the action after announcing their new shopping platform recently. But what are the more unusual things that people have been buying? Liam Geraghty has been finding out.
Since this pandemic started, I've ordered a back support cushion for my chair, cloth masks for my parents, and a coffee pot. Oh, and I did get into a bidding war on eBay for a vintage 1980s Fraggle Rock toy. 25 euro well spent, I think you'll agree. With the country stuck at home, there has been a boom in online shopping.
It's so convenient.
That's Elaine Moore, deputy editor of the Lex column in the Financial Times.
As soon as you start doing it and you realise that you can, with a couple of clicks, get anything ordered to your door, that sort of convenience, I think, becomes very addictive. I think idle online browsing is probably going to become a lot more common. There's been a rise in the number of online shopping platforms that have been launched since the pandemic began.
It's a comforting thing to just scroll through an endless array of beautifully photographed objects that might make your life better.
James Dempsey is a secondary school teacher. So far in lockdown, James has ordered a cast iron pot for his sourdough, a fancy corkscrew, and indicator lights for his bike.
When it arrives in the post, like, and this is going to make me sound horrendous, but like, occasionally I might have even forgotten that I bought this thing and that I have this incredible treat from James of 2 to 3 weeks ago, who made some sensible but not financially sensible decision.
Holly Leddy Flood is an illustrator and graphic designer who had been freelancing for a creative agency.
But they kind of cut the workers, or the amount of people working there, down to kind of a skeleton team. So there's not many people in there. So I'm kind of at home. I've had to sign on to the dole. I bought a giant straw hat that I felt like I needed for gardening. I thought the straw hat would go well with the aesthetic of being a full-time gardener now. And it's a really, really big hat to try and cheer myself up. So
back with Elaine Moore, she says older people have been the big converts to online shopping during all of this.
I'm living with my parents and they are in the vulnerable category for the virus. So I supported, shall we say, encouraged, nagged them to set up a grocery, online grocery shopping. There was some resistance at the beginning and that has been a roaring success that I think will continue forever, hopefully.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Well, earlier in the show, we were chatting about the reopening of retail. It's been a strange few months of empty main streets and boarded up shops. Much of the footfall has instead gone online. Facebook is even getting in on the action after announcing their new shopping platform recently. But what are the more unusual things that people have been buying? Liam Geraghty has been finding out.
Since this pandemic started, I've ordered a back support cushion for my chair, cloth masks for my parents, and a coffee pot. Oh, and I did get into a bidding war on eBay for a vintage 1980s Fraggle Rock toy. €25 well spent, I think you'll agree. With the country stuck at home, there has been a boom in online shopping.
It's so convenient.
That's Elaine Moore, deputy editor of the Lex column in the Financial Times.
As soon as you start doing it and you realise that you can, with a couple of clicks, get anything ordered to your door, that sort of convenience, I think, becomes very addictive. I think idle online browsing is probably going to become a lot more common. There's been a rise in the number of online shopping platforms that have been launched since the pandemic began.
It's a comforting thing to just scroll through an endless array of beautifully photographed objects that might make your life better.
James Dempsey is a secondary school teacher. So far in lockdown, James has ordered a cast iron pot for his sourdough, a fancy corkscrew, and indicator lights for his bike.
When it arrives in the post, like, and this is going to make me sound horrendous, but, like, occasionally I might have even forgotten that I bought this thing and that I have this incredible treat from James of 2 to 3 weeks ago, who made some sensible but not financially sensible decision.
Holly Leddy Flood is an illustrator and graphic designer who had been freelancing for a creative agency.
But they kind of cut the workers or the amount of people working there down to kind of a skeleton team. So there's not many people in there. So I'm kind of at home. I've had to sign on to the dole. I bought a giant straw hat that I felt like I needed for gardening. But I thought the straw hat would go well with the aesthetic of being a full-time gardener now. And it's a really, really big hat to try and cheer myself up. So
back with Elaine Moore, she says older people have been the big converts to online shopping during all of this.
I'm living with my parents and they are in the vulnerable category for the virus. So I supported, shall we say, encouraged, nagged them to set up a grocery, online grocery shopping. There was some resistance at the beginning and that has been a roaring success that I think will continue forever, hopefully.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.